Daf Vav. So we got four lines down. The Gemara says, Ba'iminei me Rava. They asked from Rava the following question. Sounds like a bit of a random shaila, but slightly connected to the previous sugya. The previous sugya we were discussing if chametz was left in by soldiers, by the army, by the government. So here's a question related to the army's involvement in person's money as well. Nothing to do with chametz, but still the involvement of the government. So the Gemara says, Ba'iminei me Rava behemas arnuna. What exactly is a behemoth's arnuna? So Rashi tells us around 6 and a half lines down, arnuna is hamelach notel iser min ha-behema u-minatua. They had taxes, they collected taxes. So part of the taxes was that the king collects 10% of the behema, 10% of the tua. So now that means every animal that you own, there's a certain percentage of ownership that the government has. Okay, so what's the relevance to a bechor? So Rashi goes on, the next Rashi explains that chayeves bebechora, the Kaimlan, we learned in the very beginning of Maseches Bechoros, the Kaimlan kol sheyad nachri be'emtza p'tura mina bechor. If I own a animal and it gives birth to a firstborn animal, another kosher animal, so if I have exclusive ownership, so I have that requirement of giving it to the Kohen, and the Kohen brings it as a carbon, it's a bechor. But if a non-Jew has partial ownership as well, we're partners in this, so then I'm actually pater from bringing the Bechor. There is no Kedushas Bechor. So here, where the king has a certain percentage of money that's going to him from my animal, every animal that I own, then it will be pater from a Bechor, or no, do we say he hasn't collected just yet, and therefore he doesn't really own it, and we would be chayv in the Bechor. So that's the question again. Behemas arnuna chayeves bebechora, or eina chayeves bebechora? So the Gemara explains, whenever you could kind of remove the king's, his bilus over my animal, I could just pay him off. Then instead of giving you 10% of my animal, I'll give you 10% of the worth of the animal. I'll give you money instead. Lo kami bailan, that was never a question. That you're certainly chayev. Is that your chayvin? That clearly shows that he doesn't own your animal. He just wants money from you. So if you pay him enough money, that's fine. He's off your back, and you're chayvin a bechor. The question is, ki kami bailan hecha de lo matzi misalik lebezuzet. When you can't pay him off, he's going to take 10% of your animal. So then that was the shaila. My, what's the din? So Amr lehu, p'tur, you're pater, because since he has 10% ownership of your animal, you certainly are pater from the bechor. But doesn't the Brisa say otherwise, that chayeves, that one would be chayeva by behemas arnuna? And the Gemara says, that Brisa that says you're chayev in Bechor, that's referring to Hasam de Matzim Mesalikle, where you could pay him off. But in a case where you can't pay off the king, where he's going to take 10% of the actual animal, einachanami, you would be pater in Bechor. Gemara now quotes a slightly different version of this conversation. Ikud Amri Amarava Behemas Arnuna Ptura Mina Bechora. One is pater from paying from an animal, giving the Bechor of an animal that is partially owned by the king and his tax collectors. V'afagav d'matzim mesalikli. Even though you can pay him off, in the end of the day they assume that you're still pater from paying the Bechor to the Kohen. So Gemara says, Isas Arnuna Chayeves Bechala. However, let's say he has partial ownership of the dough that you're making. He collects taxes from every piece of dough you make, so that you're chayv in chala. V'yafa gav d'lamatzi misalikli, even though I couldn't pay him off. So the din is, when it comes to chala, I only have to pay chala of that which I own. The pasuk says, Ariso Seichem, that you have to own the dough. If I'm mafish chala from something that a goy owns, I don't have to be mafish chala, only if I have exclusive ownership. The Gemara actually points out in Masecha Sukkah, that Ariso Seichem Chala is one of the few items that you have to own to perform the mitzvah. The other one is Lakachtem Lachem Beyom Arishon, that you have to own Dalin Minim. Lakachtem Lachem, you have to own it to be Chayiv in Dalin Minim. If you were borrowing on the first day of Sukkah, you're not Yotze. So the Gemara says Ariso Seichem is another example that you have to own it to be Chayiv in Chala. The Gemara says a third example is Matzah. The Gemara says it doesn't say Matzah Schem anywhere, but there's a Gzer Shav, it says Lachem by matzah, it says lachem by lulav, so you're chayiv in matzah also. Only that if I own the matzah, am I yotze the mitzvah. It comes up interestingly that if you it's brought down by the Sfas Emes, that if you're eating at someone's house Leil Seder, you don't own the matzah, he paid for the matzah. So what you should do is the Baal Bas should say, I'm being makna over to you the matzah, whatever goes to you becomes yours, so you're yotze the din of lachem even by matzah. So one of the three examples is eschal ariso seichem. So that means if the goy has partial ownership with my dough, I'm actually pater from hafrashas chala. So how come that when I have to pay taxes in every dough that I separate, and the government, the king owns it, I should be pater from chala? That's not ariso seichem. And so the Gemara explains what's the difference. How come by the behema, when the government owns part of it, I'm pater, but by the chala, I'm still chayiv? So the Gemara answers, my taima, because behema is like chala, Isa lestai kala. A behema has a kala, has a voice. People know about it. In other words, everybody knows that the king has a partial ownership in my bechor, and when I go ahead and eat my bechor, I don't give it to the kohen. Everybody knows that there's a partnership with the king. When it comes to the dough, not everybody is aware, and when they see me eating my dough, they might think I wasn't mafresh challah, and they may not know that the king had partial ownership, and that's why I wasn't mafresh challah. It's an issue of Mara's eye. And just look at Rashi to put this all together. Rashi says around, I don't know, 20 narrow lines down, Isas arnuna chayevis, the dough, your chayv and challah. V'yafa gav de isas nachri ptura, even though normally dough owned by a nachri is pater from challah, v'ochel Yisrael below challah, you could eat it without separating challah at all, d'ha ariso sechem ksiv. Zu chayevis, this example you actually chayv. The less like challah, people are not so aware that the king might have a certain ownership and tax rights to my dough. But Roa, one who sees, Omer Shalohi, they'll think it's my dough, the ochla below challah, and he'll eat it, and he ate it without eating challah. About behema is like challah, but everyone's aware with regards to the behema, so it seems to be just a question of awareness of people who live near you or who see you eating. Fine. Gemara now says, Tanu Rabbanan, Nachri shenichnas lechatzeiro shel Yisrael. A Nachri walks into my courtyard, a courtyard of a yid, who betzeko b'yada, he's holding chametz in his hand. It's Pesach, and these are my property. I get all excited. How could you bring chametz into my property? It's Pesach. Ein zakuk levar. You don't have to burn it, because that's his chametz, not my chametz. Granted, it's my property, but it's his chametz in his hand. I don't own it. Hifkido etzlo. If, however, he was mafkid to me, he gave me his chametz to watch. So then, zakuk levar, I need to burn it, because then I have a certain responsibility if it gets lost. So it's a certain level that davra hagarin lamamun kimamun dami. So if I have to watch it, so then I need to burn it. If I set aside a house that is yours, you could borrow it from me, you could rent it from me. Ein zakuk levar, that's not mine, you could keep it, it's your house, I have nothing to do with this. Shenemar lo yimatze, so it says in the pasuk lo yimatze. So Gemara wants to know, what's lo yimatze going on? Is that explaining the resha, or is that proving the seifa? So Gemara says, my kamar, what's lo yimatze going on? Which part of this statement? So Amar Papa, aresha kai, it's referring to the resha, which said, v'hachi kamar, Hifkidu etzlo, if he's mafkid to me that I need to watch his chametz and Pesach comes, zokik levar, I need to burn it. Why? Shenemar lo yimatze, because I can't have it found anywhere in my property where I have responsibility. So lo yimatze is proving the ratio that I need to burn it if I'm watching, if I'm a shomer of someone's chametz. Rav Ashi says no. Amr li olam asefa. The words lo yimatze is going on the seifa, which is that if he has a special house for himself, I don't have to burn it. Lo yimatze, you would imagine, is proving how to burn something, not how to not burn something. So how is lo yimatze proving that when he's mafkid, we're at the when I'm miyached a bias, I don't have to burn it? So the Gemara says, v'hachi kamar. Yichel a bias, if I set aside a house that you could use the house, you could rent the house, ein zakuk levar, I don't need to burn it. Why? Shenemar lo yimatze bevatechem, I can't find it in my house. But hayat lav didehu, but that house I just gave the guy is his house, not my house. Denachi ki kamayel levesa, denafshe kamayel, when he brings the chametz into the property, it's his own property that I lent it to him, that I rented to him, and therefore, so lo yimatze bivatechem, I'm only obligated in food in my house, not chametz in somebody else's house. So lo yimatze is proving both the resha and the seifa. So Gemara now comments on this last point. It sounds like if I give over a house to a nachri, or I rent a house to nachri, it sounds like he owns that house. Now, even though the title's in my name, I'm actually the landlord, but I'm giving him rights to use it, it becomes his. So the Gemara says, is that really true? Last five narrow lines in the Amud here. Lememra, dischirus, kanya. Is that really to suggest that when a person leases an apartment, the socher, the tenant, he owns it? The Hatnan, the Mishnah tells us, Masech is avodah zarah. Even in a place where it says you are allowed to rent out a property to a nachri, lo leves dira amru, you can't rent it out for him to use as a living space. You can rent it out for him to use as a storefront. But to live there, you can't rent a house to live there. Why not? Why can't he rent a house for a nachri to live there? We know it's going to be only a matter of time until they bring an avodah zarah in the house. And that's bringing avodah zarah into your house. You're the landlord, even though you're renting it to him. Now, if you were to assume, like we just said above, that when you rent out an apartment, the tenant has full ownership, so who cares? It's not yours anymore. Ki kamayel, when he brings the avodah zarah, levesa denafshe kamayel, he's bringing the avodah zarah into his own house, not to my house. Just like by the chametz, we said, he brings the chametz into his own house, not my house, so to the avodah zarah is in his house and not my house. So it doesn't go, so what is it? Who is the owner when you rent out a property? So the Gemara says, no. Shiny hacha, really, in general, when you're the landlord and when you rent it out, you remain the landlord, it remains your house. And that's why you can't rent a house to a Nachri, because he's going to bring Avodah Zarah. But there's a special kula, actually, when it comes to chametz, that you're allowed to, even though you own the house that he's using, that's not a violation of chametz. Why? Because Shani Hacha, here by Pesach, is different. The Afkei Rachmana B'Lashon Lo Yimatzeh. The Torah uses the words Lo Yimatzeh, which means Mishe Matzeh Biyotcha, Yotzeh Zeh She'enu Matzeh Biyotcha. To emphasize only that which is found in your hand, that which is accessible to you. But since this is not accessible to you, even though you own the house, but it's not accessible, it's not Matzeh Biyotcha, therefore you actually putter by the case of chametz. But across the board, regarding all other halachas, a person, a maschir, who rents out the property, he is still considered the owner of it, and it would impact halachas such as avodah zar being brought into his property. So Gemara now says two wide lines down here. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav. Hamotzei chametz bebeso, beyamtif, kofalav esakli. The person finds chametz on his house, and it's yantif. And of course, you can't burn chametz on yantif, so what should you do? You should cover it up. You should cover the chametz with a kli. So this becomes an interesting question. We're learning Hilchos Muksa now in Smichos Chaver. So there's a din that you're not allowed to move an item, a non-Muksa item, a kli. I can't move it to protect the Muksa item. So chametz is certainly Muksa on Pesach. So for me to take a cup and cover a Muksa item, that's a violation of Hilchos Muksa. If you look at Tosfos, he asks this question. He says, Kofo love kli. V'yafagav, even though the Gemara tells us in Perek Kira Shabbos Mem Gimel, that Lizimanda Amar, Ein Kli Nitel, El Davar HaNitel, that you can only use a kli for the purpose of another object that's nita, that's movable. In other words, I can move a cup to cover another non-muksa item. But to cover a muksa item, that's awesome. Now, even though the cup itself is not muksa, but to move it to help something that's muksa, like chametz, that would be usher. So how am I allowed to cover the chametz up? It's a violation of muksa. So the Gemara Tosa answers, ikil okme bitzarach makomo. It's where I need the place of the cup. In other words, the cup is in my seat. I can't sit down. So I pick up the cup to move it out of the way so I could sit. That I could use. The problem is, now once I pick it up, I could move wherever I want. So I know I'm going to place it over here on top of the chametz. I didn't pick up the cup just to cover the chametz. I picked it up because I needed the place where the cup was. But once you picked it up, you could decide to place it down wherever you want. That's one way around this issue. Or inami hachashari bishum dilma asil michlin. Maybe because there's such a strong concern that I might eat the chametz, we're able to override the violation of muksa. I mean, normally you can't move a non-muksa item to benefit a muksa item. But in the case of chametz, where there's a real chashash, I might eat the chametz, so then they overrode the violation of muksa and allowed us to do this in this particular case. Rav Chan Wasserman gives another answer. He says a very interesting answer. It's only usher to move an item like a cup to protect a muksa item. But here, I'm not protecting a muksa item. I'm protecting myself. I'm not muksa. Why am I covering the chametz? I'm not covering the chametz to protect the chametz. I'm covering the chametz to protect myself, so I don't eat the chametz. It's really a nitel lid for me. And that's, I'm certainly not muksa, and therefore, Rav Chanan says, that's another reason why you would be able to move the cup in order to cover the chametz. So back inside the Gemara now. So Gemara says, again, if you see chametz on yantif, you're allowed to cover it up with a cup. So the Gemara says, actually look at Rashi, interesting Rashi here. Rashi says, kofa lav es a kli, around eight narrow lines up, you can't move the chametz, it's muksa. You didn't violate b'yirah. Why? We assume you did bittul. So even though the chametz is presently in your house, but you did bittul, so you don't own the chametz that's there. But still, you have to cover it up. Why? Lest I come to eat it, so you cover it just so I don't eat the chametz. But in terms of ownership, I don't own it because there is bittul. So the Mefarshim point out, according to Rashi, it's implied that if, let's say I didn't do bittul. If I didn't do bittul, what should you do then? Rashi implies if you didn't do bittul and I'm violating Baal Yira, I should pick up the chametz and take it out of my house. I can't burn it, but I could pick it up. Isn't that a violation of muksa? Who cares? Rashi implies that you're able to override the Isser muksa, which is the Rabbanon, to protect yourself from the Isser deraisa of having chametz in your property. The Maram Chalava, one of the Rishonim on Pesachim, argues and says that's not the case. When Chachamim create a muksa, they create a muksa even b'makom adin deraisa, which means that even though you're violating the Isser deraisa of Baal Yira, you cannot pick it up and violate muksa. You're stuck with that on Shabbos. You could try to cover it so you don't eat it, but you're not going to override or circumvent the Isser of Baal Yira because you can't move an item of muksa even if it's in the face of an Isser deraisa. Okay, let's go weiter. Now the Gemara says, again, read this one more time, two wide lines down. Amar Yehuda Amar Rav, Hamotzi Chametz Bebeso, Beyamtev Kof Alav Ezekli. Amar Rava, Im Shel Hekdesh Hu Einotzach. Let's say that Chametz that's in your house is actually Hekdesh. That person was Makdesh is Chametz, so it's Hekdesh. Then he says you don't need to cover the Kli. Why not? Cover the Chametz. Why not? My Taima, Mivdal Bedile Mineh. people know to separate from Hekdesh. You don't need Hekdesh. Hekdesh people take very, very seriously. Chametz is around all year, so Chametz, I might come to eat it, and therefore you need to cover it up lest I come to eat it. But if something's Hekdesh, people will take it very, very seriously. You don't need an added level of protection to cover up if it's a Hekdesh. So Gemara says, similarly, Vamar Yehuda Marav, Chemtzel, Shel Nachri, if you have the Chametz of a Nachri in your property, Osa L'mechita Asara Tvachim Mishum Heker. Now, I don't own it. It's his. And I gave him a corner designated for himself to use. I have nothing to do with this chametz. However, I can still see it. I might come to eat it. So you need to build a wall, a 10 tefachim partition, just as a reminder that you shouldn't eat the chametz. It's Pesach. Vim shel hektish. However, if the chametz of the nachri is hektish, enotzarch, I don't need this, because when it comes to hektish, I take that very, very seriously. And my time, mivdal badila inashmina. People just have a natural tendency to know how to stay away from hektish, and that doesn't need an extra level of precaution. As opposed to chametz, regular chametz, even though it's serious, it's kares, we're used to eating it all year round, so that people are not as comfortable separating from. That's where you need an extra level of protection. Gemara now says, 6 wide lines down, Amar Rav Yehuda Marav, so this is a very common question. Of course, maybe not this past year, but in previous years, though, when people were traveling. So when they travel to go away for a Pesach program, so do they have to check before they leave or not? So the Gemara says it depends 30 days before, 30 days or within 30 days. If a guy is leaving more than 30 days, which is kodem shloshim yom, 31 days or more, then he doesn't have to mivar lechametz. He's not in the tkuf of Pesach. And it's really off the map for him. There's no need to burn chametz. If he leaves, however, within toch shloshim yom, zakik levar, he needs to burn the chametz within 30 days from when Pesach is. So Amar Bai comes and qualifies this statement. He says, Had the Amr is that which it says, toch shloshim zakik levar, that if you leave within 30 days, you need to burn the chametz. La amrin ela shadait alach, so it's only true if you plan to return. And Rashi says, bimei Pesach, to return on Pesach. Because what would happen is, you're going to come back on the third day of Pesach and you have chametz all over the place. So if you leave within 30 days of Pesach and you plan to return on Pesach, you need to burn, get rid of the chametz before you leave. Aval, however, if you don't plan to come back on Pesach, ain daito lachzer, you don't plan to come back until after Pesach is over, then he says, ain zakek levar, there's no need to burn it because you're out of the house. You don't plan to be in the house at all on Pesach. So Amar Lei Rava, Rava says, v'daito lachzer, afilo mer shoshana nami. Your plan is to return on Pesach itself, so even if you leave from Rosh Hashanah 6 months beforehand, you should have to burn it beforehand. If you plan to show up on Pesach in your house and there's chametz there, it shouldn't make a difference how far in advance you're leaving from when Pesach begins. 6 months beforehand, if you anticipate the return on Pesach, you should burn the chametz. So it shouldn't have to do with when you plan to return. Ella, what he says is, Rava understands, Ella Amar Rava, Had Amris Kodem Shloshim Yom Ein Dakik Levayer, when we said that if you're leaving more than 30 days before Pesach, that you don't need to burn the chametz, Lo Amrin Elash Ein Daito Lachzer, when you don't plan to return back, Aval Daito Lachzer, if you plan to return on Pesach, Afilu Merash Hashanah Dakik Levayer, you certainly have to clean and burn, even if you plan to leave as early as Rosh Hashanah. Rava goes l'shitaso. Dama Rava ha'osa beso otzer. A person makes his house into an otzer, into some type of storage unit. Shloshim yom, 30 days before Pesach, kodem shloshim yom, ein zakek levar. You don't need to burn it. Why not? So if you look at Rashi, last two lines of Rashi, otzer, shehichnis sham tvua v'tachdel chametz. You have a house, and it's an extra house that you have, and there's plenty of chametz on the floor. And you decide to use this actually as a storage unit. So you start bringing all your grains, all the wheat, all the barley from outside just to store it, let it dry over the winter. So you bring it inside. Now you cover all the chametz in the bottom. We learn later on, v'amrinu l'kaman, chametz shenafla lav mapolis, harehu kimavur. A person has a house that crumbles, it gets destroyed. And even though you might know there's chametz inside there, but it's underneath all the rubble, there's no need to do bedika, no need to do beer. So too, if you cover it up, as with Tua, because you've changed the function of the house, you also wouldn't need to check it because the chametz is really inaccessible. And the Gemara will learn when we get to this daf that if the dog could sniff it out, that means it's still accessible. If the dog cannot sniff it out, that means it's not accessible. So if you cover your house, turn it into an otzer so much, where it's covered with piles and piles of grain or corn or whatever you seem to store there, then you would be potter. So that's what the Gemara says. He says, again, ha'ose beso otzer. A person changes his house, which has chametz in it, to an otzer and starts to store things. Kodem shloshim yom, if it's 30 days or more before Pesach, ein zakek levar, because before 30 days, we're not in the tkufa, we're not in the zman of Pesach. There's no obligation of any inyani Pesach. We'll see why that is in just a moment. But if you change your house to an otzer toch shloshim, within 30 days of Pesach, then zakik levar, you have to burn the chametz. Why? Because already once you're within 30 days of Pesach, Pesach's on the radar, and your obligation is to get rid of it. To just try to circumvent it by turning your house into an otzer, that doesn't work. You already have a chiv chametz, chiv v'dikas chametz, within 30 days of Pesach. And the Gemara says further, v'kodem shloshim yom, even if it's prior to 30 days of Pesach, nami lo amar, and it's only true that you're exempt from Pesach, she'ein from v'dikas chametz, she'ein adait lefnosef, you have no intent of turning the house back over, the otzer back over into a house. If you plan to make it into an otzer, you know, forever, so then you're pater. If you have the plan to eventually turn your house into an otzer, and then the otzer back into your house, then afilu kodem shloshim yom, even if it's more than 30 days before Pesach, nami zakik levar, one would have to go ahead and burn the chametz. So these are the different dinim. So where do you get this 30-day mark from? Where's 30 days come from? That's the together when you have to bir chametz and not bir chametz. And so the Gemara says, hani shloshim yom mai avidasayu. Where do you get the 30 days? It seems somewhat arbitrary. Kitatanya, Shalin Vidarshan Vihilchas Pesach, Kodim Pesach. You have to darshan halachas, you have to ask questions, you have to darshan halachas with the Rebbe. And so that's all 3 days prior to Pesach. And Shloshim Yom, that's where it comes from. Now there's a discussion, a number of interesting discussions. We won't go all the details right now, but does this apply to other Yomim Tovim? The Bishop Brewer talks about maybe Sukkot, it does apply. Shavuos, it shouldn't apply. There are really no halachas on Shavuos. Talk about Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur. Does it apply to any other areas outside of Pesach? Another interesting question that the Pri Chadosh talks about, you calculate 30 days before Pesach, it's actually on Purim. Purim's day one of 30 days. So should a person start learning Hilchos Pesach on Purim itself? Pri Chadosh found that hard to believe that you would actually be learning Pesach on Purim. He says it's lav dafka 30 days. It means 29 days. That's when, he says, you know, the truth is usually Adar is 29 days. And so you could hop 30 days. When it's a 30-day month, you get the 30 full days there. But Pri Chadosh says a person should not start learning on Purim. Other Achron argue and say that one should dafka start learning Pesach on Purim to start getting the 30 days in. But the truth is, in the Sfarim HaKadoshim, they talk about there's a very beginning of connecting Yevam Tovim to each other. So outside the calculation of 30 days, just learning the Halacha, to bridge Pesach and Purim together, that's actually a big Indian in the Sfarim HaKadoshim. Purim and Pesach have a lot to do with the Geula. The Gemara talks about it. There's two Adars. Do you make Pesach, do you make Purim and Adar Rishon, Adar Sheni? We, of course, assume Purim is Adar Sheni. Why? The Gemara says, be Mesamech Geula LeGeula. We want to connect the Geula Purim to the Geula Pesach. So there's a very strong correlation between Pesach and Purim. So it's not so far-fetched to start learning Hilchos Pesach on Purim. So there's an Indian in Halacha, and there's an Indian even in Chassidus to learn Purim over Pesach already on Purim. But the 30-day count comes based on this concept of preparing 30 days before Pesach. Comes along with the Gemara, the last line here of Amud Aleph, Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel Omer, he says, Shtei Shabbat says, all you really need is 2 weeks of preparation prior to Pesach. So my time at the Tanakhama, where does the Tanakhama get 30 days from, no? So going on to Amud Beis, the Gemara explains that Shaharai Moshe Omer Pesach Rishon, it was Pesach Rishon, it was Yud Dalid Nisan, and people said, wait a second, we're Tameh, we can't perform Pesach Rishon, that means we're left out of the Tzibur, what do we do? Umazir ala Pesach Sheni, he told them all about the Lachas of Pesach Sheni, which is Yud Dalid Iyar, a month later. So we see 30 days prior, he warned about the Dinim of Pesach, so that's where you get 30 days from. Shenemar tez in the Pasach, Vayasu b'nei Yisrael as a Pesach b'mo'ado, Uksiv it says, Vayu anashim asher hayu tamei lenefesh adam, there are people who are tamei, you couldn't do this. They said, ah, don't worry, we'll get you next month, in 30 days from now. So he already gave the halachas of carbon Pesach Sheni, 30 days prior, so we apply that to Pesach Rishon, and we apply it to other Yomim Tovim as well, possibly. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Omer Amalecha, he responds back, no, it wasn't because you're trying to learn halach of 30 days Pesach Rishon to Pesach Sheni. I did the ayu b'mil de pischa, masik lay lechulim mil de pischa. He was telling them halachas of Karim Pesach, it was Yud Dal Nisan. Once he spoke of Pesach Rishon, he may as well talk about Pesach Sheni as well. Not to tell me a din of 30 days, just because that's part of the same topic of conversation they were talking about, but that's not meant to be a drush of 30 days. So he rejects that raya of 30 days. So what's the basis for Rabbi Shimon Gamliel? My time in the Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, Sharei Moshe Omed Rosh Chodesh. It was Rosh Chodesh, HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem, Parshas Bo. He was teaching Klai Yisrael about the mitzvah of Rosh Chodesh Nisan. And Umazir ala Pesach, he started telling people, now make sure you get a seh and get a Karban Pesach ready. So that was 15 days, that was around 2 weeks, 14 days rather, 2 weeks before Karban Pesach. Uksiv Dabru al Das, called Das Yisrael, Leimor Be'eser LaChodesh, the 10th of Chodesh, Hazeh, V'ichu Lachem Ish Shele Beis Avos V'gomer, on the 10th, which is going to be Shavuos HaGadol, get yourself a sheep, tie it to the bedpost, inspect it for Mumim, and therefore we see that 14 days prior to Karban Pesach, which was Rosh Chodesh Nisan, is when he warned them about the Karban Pesach, and we learn 2 weeks based on this, that's according to Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. Fine. Now, there's an interesting machlokas here, whether or not these 30 days, requirement of inspecting 30 days prior, is a din deraisa or a din derabanan. The Rosh says it's only a takanas chachamim, but Yeshua felt, based on these psukim, it's actually a din deraisa that one needs to inspect within 30 days, leaving from Pesach. We paskin, like the Tanakama, that 30 days is the shir, not the 2 weeks of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Gemara now says, Mimai didar et beresh yirchakai. Who says that when Moshe Rabbeinu was teaching them about the halachas, he was referring to Rosh Chodesh? According to that second drasha, Hachodesh is Alechem, maybe it was Dilma Barba B'Yircha or B'Chamisha B'Yircha Kai, maybe it was the fourth of the month, the fifth of the month. Where do you see it was actually Ma'amish on Rosh Chodesh? So Gemara says, you're right, let's bring another raya. How do we know he's warning them on Rosh Chodesh? So El Amar Rabba, Rabba says, Bar Shimi Shimi Mishmei Deravina Mehach, from the following pasuk. It says, Vayidab B'Hashem El Moshe, the Midbar Sinai, Bishana Hashenis, Bechodesh HaRishon, Moshe was speaking to Klai Yisrael in the second year on the first month. Uksiv, it says, Vayasu B'nei Yisrael Asa Pesach B'Mado, and they did the Kar Pesach in the right time. So it says, but you know, Bechodesh HaRishon, the first month. So does that not imply the first day of the first month, the Rosh Chodesh? And the Gemara says, no. Hachanami, the same question. Mimai Debereish Yirchakai. Who says it was the first day of the first month? Maybe Dilma Bar Babi Yircha or B'chamisha B'Yircha Kai. Maybe it's the fourth or fifth day of the first month, but not necessarily Rosh Chodesh. So Amar Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak Asim Midbar B'Midbar. We have a Gezer Shavah. Ksiv Halcha says B'Midbar Sinai. Ksiv Halcha it says Vayidab Be'Hashem El Moshe B'Midbar Sinai Be'El Moed Be'echa L'Chodesh, the first day of the Chodesh Sheni. So just like the word Moed there is referring to Rosh Chodesh, so through the word Moed here about Pesach is also referring to Rosh Chodesh. Mala Halan Rosh Chodesh Afkan Rosh Chodesh. So that's how we're able to create the equation here that was referring to Rosh Chodesh when he first gave the warnings halachas of Karba Pesach. So Gemara now says V'nichta Bereisha D'Chodesh Rishon, Father Nichta D'Chodesh Sheni. So if you follow along the pesukim here, the storyline is out of order. It first mentions the pasuk about Chodesh Sheni, the second month, and then it talks about the pasuk of Chodesh Rishon, the first month. It's out of order. How could it be out of order? And the Gemara is going to answer a phrase that we all know, that Amar Rav Menashe Bar Tachlifa Mishmei Derav Zos Amaris. We learn from here, Ein Muktam Umuchar Batorah. There is no order when it comes to the Torah. Things are out of order all the time. So even though the pasuk first mentions the second month, and then it goes back to mention the first month, that doesn't really bother us because the Torah oftentimes is out of order. So the Gemara then says along these lines, that Amar Rav Papa Lo Amar Ela Betrei Inyan. It's only true when it comes to two different topics that we assume that you can have different topics out of order. But Aval B'chad Inyan, if it's all one storyline within one perek, within one section of the Torah, Ma'i D'Muktam Muktam, Ma'i D'Mucha Mucha. We assume how the events took place were chronological, and therefore if it's in the same section of the Torah, Pasuk Aleph before Pasuk Beis implies that there was a certain order involved. We only say that things are out of order when there are different sections of the Torah, two different Inyanim, two different topics. If you don't say this, if you assume that even within the same inyan, even within the same story, that things might be out of order, then you're going to get rid of a number of the different drushes of the Yud Gimel Milos Shator Nejeshbem, meaning, when you have a klal, when there's a general rule, and then the pasuk has a very specific detail, prat, so, ein bechal el master prat, we say the klal is limited by the prat, that's a special drusha, dilma, prat, klal, maybe it should be the other way around, maybe the prat should really be before the klal. In other words, let's say the klal is a pasuk aleph, and the prat is pasuk beis, well maybe we should say it's out of order, and pasuk beis, the prat, should really be before the klal, it should be a prat or klal, not a klal or prat. That would throw away all these different types of drashas. And so the opposite. Sometimes you have in the psukim a prat first, and then a klal. So if we assume things are out of order, so prat or klal means nasa klal, most of all a prat. If there's a prat, the klal expands the prat. That's the drasha. But how do you know you can make your drasha? Dilma, it should really be the opposite order. Maybe we should assume the psukim are out of order, it should really be a klal and a prat. Who? So therefore we assume that everything in the same topic, the same inyan, is all must be in the right order. Otherwise it gets rid of it, buttresses the entire drushes of the Torah. So upon that's the exception. That's the understanding. In two different topics, we assume that can be ein muktam amucha b'Torah, but within one inyan, within one topic, we assume it is in the proper order. Ihachi, that's the case. Afiyu betray inyaninam, that even two different topics, we have sometimes we make drushes from one pasuk to the next. And we should be concerned that things are out of order. Meaning, Hanich l'man da'amar, if this all makes sense, da'amar klal uprat, hamru chakin zemizeh, ein danino soba klal uprat shapir. There's a machlokas that sometimes, oftentimes, we have a klal uprat that are right next to each other. But sometimes you get a klal who's pasuk aleph and a prat that's in pasuk vav. They're far away from each other. So there's an opinion that you're allowed to actually make a klal prat even though they are meruchakim mizeh mizeh. So now you have two different inyanim. So I have a klal in an aleph and a prat in a beis. So now we're saying, wait a second, but maybe it's out of order. It should really be a prat and klal, not a klal prat. So if you assume that you cannot make a klal prat that are meruchakim, they have to only be when they're adjacent to each other. Okay, that's fine. That's okay. Therefore, if they're two different inyanim, we don't make klal prats if they're far away from each other. We're okay with them being out of order because we wouldn't make a drasha of two different topics. But el, if you assume the man damar danin, ma'ikel meimar, if you assume you are allowed to make a klal prat from muhakim, they're two psukim that are far away from each other, how could you do that? Maybe they're far away from each other and they're also out of order. And it shouldn't be a klal prat, but it should be a prat klal or vice versa. So how can you make a drasha of the muhakim zemizeh? So the Gemara answers that no. Even the opinion that says you can make a klal prat even when the pesukim are not adjacent, even when they are meruchakim zemizeh, there's a limitation how far they could be. Bechad inyan, it's only true if it's all within the same storyline, within the same topic. They're all in the same parak, let's say. One's in pasuk alf, one's in pasuk chaf. So then that's all we assume in the proper seder, they're meruchakim zemizeh, but they're still within the same storyline. But when it comes to aval betrei inyan, if they're two different topics, ain't done. Even the one who holds you can make such a klal prat when the meruchakin, there is, again, a limitation. You can't use it when they're two different topics because then maybe they're out of order and it would be inappropriate to make a such a drush. Gemara now says, last sugya in the Amud here, Amr of Yehuda Marav, Habodek Tzarech Shevata, a person who does badika also needs to do a bittel in addition to the badika. In addition to badika, why? My timer. Because maybe there's some crumbs which I didn't find when I did my inspection. I found my big challahs and my big bread and then noodles and whatnot. But I can't find every crumb here. So I'll do bittel in case there's crumbs. But the Gemara says, perurim, halo chashivi. They're not chashiv. It's meaningless. It's a little tiny piece of crumbs. I don't need to clean that. I don't own that. And that's meaningless. And therefore, I don't need to do a bittel on those small crumbs. So the Gemara says, v'chi tema, kemen diminta luhu aga besa chashiva. Maybe you're going to suggest, well, since it's in my house and it's protected by being in my house, so that itself maybe gives chashivas even to the crumbs. And how do we know such a concept? Vatani, the Brisa says, sofei te'enim u'mishamer sadeh u'mipnei anavim. Let's say you have sofei te'enim, which Rashi says are like the figs that were at the end of the season. They're not going to develop anymore. Nobody really cares about them. They're really hefker. But I'm protecting my field not because of the te'enim. I'm protecting the field because I have anavim, grapes that are still in season. But by virtue of protecting the grapes, I'm also protecting the sofei te'enim. Or let's say I've got sofei anavim, the end of the grapes, which are really useless for me. I have no value. I don't really care much about them. But I'm protecting the field, mishamer sadeo mipnei anavim. I'm protecting, sorry, mipnei makshalos, mipnei madlals, for different types of gourds or cucumbers. And by the fact that I'm protecting it for those types of vegetables, I'm protecting the grapes as well. So the din is, the question becomes, are you allowed to steal these things? Are they hefker or not hefker? Right, I'm watching my field. Normally, sofei te'enim, sofei anavim, I could care less about. You could take them, they're open for anyone who wants. They're hefker. And also, not only that, if I eat from them, there's no chiva meiser because they're really hefker. You don't take meiser on that which is hefker. But I'm still protecting my field. I've got a fence, I've got a shomer. So the fact that I'm a shomer, I'm protecting certain fruits that I want, does that also carry over to even the fruits that I don't care for? And so the Gemara says, Bizman sheha baal bais makbid aleim asurim, when the baal bais is makbid on even the sofei te'enim and even the sofei anavim, so then it's asur mishum gezel, you can't steal them, v'chayavim b'maiser, and when I eat them, I need to take maiser. Bizman she'ein baal bais makbid aleim, when the baal bais doesn't care for them, even though it's protected, so then the din is mutar mishum gezel, b'tur mishum maiser. There's no violation of someone else who takes those sofei te'enim, and if I were to eat them, I would not have to take maiser. So we see here as well that even though the crumbs are in my house, I'm not makbid. It doesn't depend on whether they're protected or not protected. It depends on whether I'm makbid or not makbid. I'm clearly not makbid on the crumbs in my floor. Take it. Gesinte, hey, they're all yours. So then why would I have to do bittel if I checked every cabinet and there's no bread and the crumbs, I don't care for them, they're hefker. So what's the need for any bittel? And the Gemara says the reason that you need a bittel is Amar Rav Gezeira Shema Yimate Glusko Yafe V'dayto Ilave. Maybe you missed a big piece of bread. Maybe you did an inspection. You didn't do so well. People have had stories where they found, I don't know, a Cheerio somewhere, and they missed it. So it could happen. Certainly when the houses are much bigger now than they were back then. So perhaps the person missed it. So just to be safe that maybe there's a nice piece of bread that you forgot to find or you missed. So we should do a bittel just in case. Now, there's a machlok is when one should do bittel. Do you do bittel at night? Do you do bittel in the morning? We're makbid to do bittel both after the bedik at night. And we do it yet again when we do the beer chametz as well. Okay, the Gemara now says, where are we? that v'chi mishkachas la. So Gemara says, wait a second, why do you have to do bittul? V'chi mishkachas la levatle. When you find you do bittul, you think, okay, why do bittul just to be safe? If you find a piece of chametz, so then you do bittul at that point. So Gemara says, dilma mishkachas la levasa isur. Maybe you're going to find the chametz after the iser kicks in, right after sheish shel, so 6 hours of erev Pesach. There's already an iser to have chametz and iser to eat chametz. So at that point, you can't do bittul. Why can't you do bittul after that point? Why, when the iser chametz kicks in, there's an iser bittul? So Gemara says, v'lab rishusei kaimei v'lo matzi mivatalei. Once the iser chametz kicked in, the Torah tells us you no longer are the owner. It's a very strange halacha. We'll see. You don't own it, but yet you're still in violation for owning it. So you're kind of stuck here. You own it that you're chayv in the iser bayi rai bayi matzei, but you don't own it in that you can't actually do bittul anymore. It's too late to do bittul. So as the Gemara says, that there are two dinim here. Damar Rabbi Elazar, shnei dvarim, the two items. Einam b'rishusah shel adam, that are not really in your rishus, and yet the Torah va'asa hakasif k'ilu b'rishuso, the Torah made it as if it is in your rishus. V'eilu hein, bor b'rishus harabim, v'chametz meshesh shalos lamala. A bor, by definition, has to be in rishus harabim. That's when you're chayv. If someone falls into a pit, you're chayv. If the bor is in my backyard, and guy falls in, that's not my responsibility. What do you do in my backyard? If I make a bor in the rishus harabim in the middle of Peninsula Boulevard, I'm responsible. Why am I responsible? I don't own Peninsula Boulevard. I shouldn't be responsible. So the din is, these are two items, a bor b'rishus harabim and chametz after 6 hours, even though I don't own either one. I'm still responsible for them. I'm still usher. So here as well. So again, back to our point here, once the iser chametz kicks in, so I don't own it actually anymore. If I don't own it, I can't do bittul. So that's why the Gemara says you should do bittul prior to the iser kicking in, just in case you might find a gluska yafeh, v'daita ilaveh. Okay, we'll stop here and everybody have a wonderful Shabbos.